Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in marketing. And today's episode is no exception. I am chatting with Maxwell Nee, who is the CRO of Score App. With over 20 years of experience in lead generation, digital marketing, and sales strategy, Maxwell has built a reputation for helping businesses achieve impressive results through inventive solutions. Now, in today's conversation, we talk about quiz marketing, the specialty of Score App, and how quizzes can really help support and amplify your lead generation strategy. We unpack how quizzes can increase conversion rates, generate high-quality leads, and also help personalize customer engagement. He walks us through how they can be integrated into marketing strategy across the funnel stages from top to bottom of funnel. We'll gain insights on how to deliver those warm leads to turn those conversions and conversations to sales and really help impact the bottom line. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Maxwell, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I'm extremely excited to have you on here. And today we're going to be talking about lead generation. So welcome.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Katya.
Absolutely. So let's have the audience get to know you a little bit. I always got my starter questions. These are easy, so no need to worry. The first question is, what was your first marketing role or what you would consider marketing, whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't? What was your first marketing role?
Yeah, so I used to work in corporate, and when I left, I started my own digital marketing agency. So I was a digital marketing agency owner and, had to do everything, do sales calls, run Facebook ads, run Instagram ads, write emails for clients, write copy, build landing pages. So all that stuff.
Nice. Now that's where you started. Where are you at now? What are you doing now? I assume still in the world of that.
Yes, that evolved into a few different businesses and then I exited that. So right now I invest as much as I, run a business. So I would probably describe myself as an entrepreneur first, investor second. Okay.
Very nice. And what is it that you love about what you currently do? But be prepared, with the good comes the bad. Tell me, I'm going to want to know what you don't like about it either. But let's start with a positive. What do you love about what you currently do?
Yeah, so I've learned enough about myself that I know what I really enjoy and what I don't enjoy. So, the way I like to work is I like to have a lot of space and time to think. Literally just go out, sit at a cafe with my notebook and work out, what's the biggest strategy, campaign, or partnership to do next in my businesses. I've got multiple businesses that I invest in and, help to build. So I also have learned that I love variety. I've learned that I personally thrive in chaos. Some people are very much like, measured discipline. They love consistency provides safety. They love like that worker bee, which is like tick, 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 chipping away at the same thing over and over. That's not me. I love the next thing. So I've created my day, my businesses, my priorities to give me everything I need to keep my batteries fully charged, which is, variety, chaos, multiple industries, that type of thing.
I like that you're a creative thinker. I love the fact that you like to go to a place and just think things through, because I think oftentimes, because it can be a little pulled in a lot of directions when it comes to marketing, you don't have enough time to think through what you want to do. So I love the fact that that's also the area that you kind of gravitate to. But like I said, I like to also know with the good and the bad, if there was anything that I could pluck out of your day to make it perfect, what would that be?
pluck out or put in?
No, pluck out. I want to make your day better, so let me remove something.
That's a good question. It would probably be yeah, so I've involved multiple businesses. Some of them aren't all filled with A players, okay. which is a huge pain in the ass. So I've worked in businesses where everyone's an A player. I've worked with there's A's and B's, and what I found is that, you know, if you have four A players, one B player, the B player will cause the whole team to operate at a B level because they will drag down the team in that they'll make two A players frustrated or one will leave, you know, and then it just drags the whole thing down. So not all my businesses were founded by me. Some of them I've joined other teams and other business partners, and they don't all have A players, which if it was up to me, I would definitely change immediately.
That's a great one to pluck out. And it really leans into that adage of you're only as strong as your weakest link. Because to your point, no matter how many A players you have, there's nothing like one person not carrying their weight in order really drags things down. Do you think that you can clearly define, or have you seen some consistencies of what an A player is? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so there's three fundamental things, like, you know, ability and everything else. I think that should be a given. So that's a bit like, you know, your intellect. You don't have to be a genius, but you have to just win your role. You know, you got to be a gold medalist in your role, you know, and your role might not be a genius role, right? But the three underlying things are, you know, the first one's integrity. So you have to, you know, when you say something, it has to mean something, you know, like you have to, if you say something, it's got to be the truth. And if you say something, it's got to be the right thing. And you wouldn't try to just fluff things, right? So integrity is like a really, really sharp, you know, like sword that's just straight, perfectly sharp. And then the next one is, you know, attitude. Like when things happen, are you whinging? Are you complaining? Are you a victim? Or do you just come out like a champion? Like, okay, cool. I understand what's going on. I understand I messed that up. You know, this is what happened. This was out of my control. This was in my control, but I understand what to do next time. You know, just really coming on top of each problem. And then the last one is the most important, that drives me nuts when people don't have this, is reliability. So if you say that you're going to do something, you're going to do it when you're going to do it, or you never overpromise anything. Like, you know, you deliver everything. And that doesn't mean that you have to work, you know, weekends, 11 p.m. at night. But if you said that you would, then you would, you know, don't change your mind. But, or if you don't want to, just say, I can't get this done until Tuesday next week, and commit by that. Because, you know, in one of my businesses, there's a guy that I'm constantly just coming up against because he never delivers anything on any deadline. And, you know, shows up to meetings late, like just really simple things. And, you know, I've said to my business partner that brought me into the team, I said, I don't want to work with him. And I'm not the first person. And, you know, he was fired from another role for the same reasons. And he's just not getting it. And, you know, he's a nice guy and whatever else, but it's doing exactly that. It's dragging down the team, you know, and it's frustrating to people. Another person wants to leave, you know, I don't want to deal with him. So it's exactly, you know, happening how you would imagine.
Now, those are fantastic things. I can't remember what you called the second one. I, in my head, filed it as under ownership. Just having ownership of like what it is you're doing, right? Reliability and integrity. And I think that those are huge. Because, you know, I also think if you have set I actually had a boss once tell me this. If you set a deadline, you set the deadline and you can't make it. What does that tell me? Like, I can't count on you. And when push comes to shove, anybody can be nice, but nice doesn't pay the bills when it comes down to it. And, you know, having A players, it does matter. That's where you see a ton of success. So I love those A player kind of things that you are looking out for. Now, because you are what I would call almost like a serial entrepreneur, that's just kind of the spirit that you embody. I imagine that you're always kind of staying up to date with the trends of what's happening in marketing, digital marketing, but in general altogether. So how do you stay up to date with the trends? Is there a newsletter, a key opinion leader? Do you just have multiple networking conversations with people? How are you staying up to date with the trends?
What do you mean by trends?
Trends that are just happening or can impact what you're doing from a marketing strategy perspective or a business perspective.
Mm. Yeah, so I'm the type of person that it'd be very rare for me to read more than 10 books a year, you know, so I typically only absorb between 5 to 10 books, sometimes even just 4, like one a quarter. And you know, when I find something new that I like, I'll totally immerse in it. I'll get obsessed about it. So the reason why I only read, you know, one book every 3 months is because I'll read that book back to back. I'll read it a few times. And then I will execute every inch of that book for 3 months and just drink all the Kool-Aid and digest it and put it all throughout all my systems and every inch of my business and scrape every barrel to fully use the full battery of it. And then I'll move on to the next thing. So that's how I absorb new things.
I want to ask you, how do you find those books then? If you are so laser focused, I shouldn't say laser focused, but if your goal is when you're consuming that content, like a book, that you want to really squeeze all the juice out of that to really get like absorb and understand it, you must be incredibly selective of what you read. So how are you getting your book recommendations? Are you on Book Talk? Just kidding.
No, I don't. You know, I just discover things organically, you know, or I handle things. What really doesn't work for me is to be at the end of a fire hose of, you know, new things, because I could easily get distracted. So, you know, it always comes from me controlling the fire hose, you know, so I've got my hands on the fire hose and I'm looking around and I'm like, hey, what's the problem that we need to solve? And then, you know, I'll find the best solution to that problem. And then I'll find the book if there is one, and then, you know, fully absorb that. So that's me.
It's very intense. I love it. And that intensity has served you well from a lead generation perspective, which is what we're going to kind of dive into. Now, I read the book that was sent over to me. Well, I started to read it. I didn't fully absorb it. But I started to read it. And one of the things in this book is we talk about warm leads. And I'd love for you to define what the idea behind warm leads.
Yeah, so let's define what's a lead, right? So a lead is a lead into an opportunity. That's what lead means. And an opportunity is an opportunity for a potential client. So it's someone that's put up their hand and say, hey, Katia, I'm potentially interested in what you have to sell. You know, here's my contact information. I'd like to receive more information. You know, I might buy today. I might buy a year from today. But I'm interested enough that you've got my permission to add me to an email list, to call me, to learn more, to invite me to an event, all that type of stuff. So that's a lead. And there's a few ways people signal interest that they're interested in you. They either need to give up, they don't just give you their contact information, name, email, phone number. They either need to trade time where they might attend like a webinar or something, or they might fill out a form, or they might read an ebook, right? Time, money, where they pay a ticket to, you know, an event of yours, or they pay an entry ticket to join a network or community, right? Or they do both, where they invest a lot of time and a lot of money, you know, where they might do like a full day workshop with you. So that's a lead. So obviously the highest quality is someone that puts in a lot of time, if not a lot of time and a lot of money. And also they give you a lot of data and a lot of information. So quiz marketing is designed to do that. It's designed to pull out a lot of data and take, you know, a few minutes of their time where they've got to think and go through this needs analysis with you, so that you can identify who's, you know, cold, warm, and hot in terms of, because not all leads are the same, you know. Yeah. Like someone, you could have 1,000 people that give up a lot of time, but only the top cream 10% of that are actually in the category of, I want to buy in the next 30 days.
Yeah. So a warm lead. Well, I actually really like that you took a step back and started defining what a lead is, because I often think that it, to your point, it's someone that's raising their hands, but I also interact with a lot of people who think that's very bottom of funnel. I'm ready to purchase. That's a lead that's coming in. That's a lot of work to get to someone that is ready to purchase. But to your point, like, you want to have a warm lead that has exchanged something for that information, right? Like, your point, one of the things that you mentioned, was the time, where they're getting some sort of value when it comes down to it. One of the things that you mentioned was quiz. Is that the part of the scorecard marketing?
Yeah, exactly. So I am an investor and part of the team at ScoreApp. So ScoreApp is a quiz marketing platform. So it's like it's a platform that does the function that's put together between ClickFunnels and, you know, SurveyMonkey. So it builds for you quiz marketing lead generation funnels that you can use in your business, and you could start with a free account. So it's very accessible, very easy. It's a software that, you know, you might pay $30 a month as a starting point, you know, when you move up to a paid plan. So to help you visualize it, the example that most people know or they've seen before is they do, like if you imagine any type of gym, personal trainer, a fitness center, you would have seen before the really classic lead generation tool that they've used, which is, you know, fill out our body type quiz.
Yes.
And then based on our body type quiz, you know, we will tell you your exact frame, you know, small, medium, large. And based on your frame, Katia, we'll recommend a personalized nutrition and workout plan that helps you achieve your summer goals in up to half the time, up to 50% faster, right? Because it's personalized to you and everyone's different. So that's compelling as a lead generation piece of value to exchange for people's information for a few reasons. You know, the first reason is that they get an instantaneous piece of value. You know, it's not like some of these details, book a call, we'll call you back. It's instantaneous. They get a personalized report, right? So they get immediate calculation, personalized report, the same process as if you were to go to a doctor, right? You get an immediate recommendation personalized to you. And they also get like a two-way interaction. So it's like a gamified experience. It's not just like, you know, book in this calendar and then, you know, we'll call you and wait for this. No, it's like, you know, do this. And then based on this, you go to the next step. And then, you know, we'll deliver something to you that's, you know, really, really personalized and tailored for you. On the other side of the fence, the business owner gets all that health, empirical, you know, symptom, problem, needs analysis data for that potential client, which is, you know, really, really outlines how hot this lead is or isn't.
I have definitely engaged with those quizzes in both my personal use and in business use, right? So I think that there is a ton of value. And when I get all of that information as a marketer, I absolutely love it. I've got a couple of follow-up questions for you though. One of them is, at what point do you introduce that quiz? It can't be at the top of the funnel, or maybe it is at the top of the funnel. I don't know. What are your initial thoughts on, like, at what point you introduce that quiz?
Good question. So there's 3 points that you can use it. The first point is, yeah, top of the funnel. So that's like the gym, the fitness coach that's it's using it to generate leads plus deliver high value. You know, a typical lead magnet will convert at like 10-15%, which is like a free ebook, a discount code, you know, a free call, a free ticket to a workshop, free ticket to a seminar, free ticket to a free video course, whatever. 10-15%. We generated 2.5 million leads for, you know, close to 10,000 clients last year. And the average conversion rate across all of those small, medium, large businesses, solopreneurs to 25 people sales teams, B2B to B2C, was 30%. But we often see 40, 50, 60% conversion rate. So there's that. And then the second place that you can use it is bottom of funnel. So we have people that have, you know, 25 people sales teams, and they will use it as like a needs analysis. So at the point of transacting a sale, recommending a product, right? If you've ever been to a doctor, you've been through this process. So it's like, hi, doctor, I'm sick. Katia, what's wrong? I don't know. Okay, well, let me identify what's wrong, where the pain point is. Do your eyes hurt? Have you been sleeping? Have you been drinking water? Are you coughing? Is your throat sore? You know, so they're ticking off and systematically moving through symptoms to zoom in on the problem and then recommend you the medicine, right? So so this happens in every sales call. You know, it's typically, if your sales call is 45 minutes, this will be like the first 15 minutes of a sales call. But you could just put this straight into a scorecard and get every sales call to fill this out before they jump on a call with you, so that you can laser in to where the pain points are, you know, immediately.
I can definitely see the use from top, and that's a great articulation of the use of the bottom of it. My second question from before also was, how long does that need to be? I'm assuming that it varies depending on your business and how much information that you're trying to get out. But as I was reading through the book, I swear there was a part, and maybe I misread it. Maybe I'd been drinking too much wine while I was reading, but I swear there was a really long quiz, which seems like a lot of time invested. And I tend to be prone to keep it short and sweet and very specific, but I mean, what are your thoughts on like the length of the quiz to really qualify the lead that is filling that out? Or do you have some sort of parameters to help you decide how long?
You know, yes and no. You know, we've seen quizzes that, you know, I've seen quizzes that have 40 questions, 4-0. You know, they take a good 3 to 4 minutes, 5 minutes to fill out.
That seems insane. 40 questions.
Yeah, but that has a 40% conversion rate. You know, and then I've seen quizzes that have 8 to 10 questions that also have a 40% conversion rate, or they have less. You know, so the length of the quiz, because you know you're engaging someone within like a game. The length of the quiz isn't really that important. What's important is the outcome, you know. So, the difference between 1 minute to 5, you know, maybe 10's getting a little bit long. Whatever it's between 1 minute to 5 to get something free that you would have otherwise paid for is not a lot of time. So it depends on the outcome.
I You know, you say it depends on the outcome, but I also think that it would depend on the business. You've already mentioned B2B and B2C that you've seen this work. What has been the most surprising business for you that you've seen this work? Or do you just go in completely like, no, this is going to work for anybody? But has there been a business that you've seen implement this as a lead generation tool where you're like, wow, even that surprised me?
Yeah, so we have 7,000 paying clients all around the world. You know, we do, you know, $6 to $7 million of revenue a year across those clients. And the vast majority of those are, yeah, solopreneurs, you know, coaches, consultants, authors, thought leaders, service providers, you know, financial planners, accountants, media ad agencies, all that type of stuff. So we have a huge range of clients, but what's common between them is that they basically all sell, you know, digital products or things that could be sold on, you know, at a global scale, whether that could be something in e-commerce, if not anyone that delivers something through Zoom type of thing that can deliver it through Zoom. Yeah.
Okay. So that's still not the most surprising one that you've seen at work. Have you seen these quizzes kind of work on service space or like products that aren't digital? Do you find that it would be just as effective?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I've seen them work in e-commerce stores. I've seen them work with, there's this one client, it's a case study on a website where they build like portable homes for people. So like, you know, like those mini homes. And then they had a quiz that said, you know, find out if like the mini home life is for you. Mm-hmm. And it's some stupid number, but they've generated like 10,000 leads over 18 months, you know, and for a really, really niche, random little thing. Yeah.
I can totally see how this is something or a strategy from a lead generation perspective that can be really effective for things like that. That's a big investment. So you kind of want to know, am I the right fit or am I just inspired by an Instagram post for like living in a tiny home, right? Versus also something as quick as like the gym example that you gave as well too. So I can definitely see it being used in that respect. And while I definitely see the value in quizzes, I'd love to hear your thoughts on lead generation in general. What do you think some of the common pitfalls that some brands fall into as it pertains to lead generation, either the executing the tactics or taking a look at the leads on once they get them?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example of what I found that works well. You know, like I when I invest in a company or when I, you know, want to build some company or whatever else, I always love to be able to do something different, you know, do something new. So it's very like the way I like to think going into something is a bit like Richard Branson. So Richard Branson is a, you know, really famous English entrepreneur. And, you know, he famously went into the airline industry and wrote down a list of everything that he hated and everything that he liked and then started his own airline industry, you know, and that was just unheard of, you know, like breaking the status quo was just like totally unheard of in that industry. So I try to do that in everything that I do, you know. So, for example, in terms of what's working, what's not in lead generation, I'd say if you are in an industry where it's very hard to talk to a human, like for example, like in our industry, the SaaS industry, whenever you ask for help in a SaaS product, you'll never get a call with a human, you know, because they've got too many clients, right? So you're talking to a chat, you're talking to a bot, and you might have a human on the other side, but it's not instantaneous, you know, just all these really common things that we've grown used to. So I'd be looking at what could you bring into this industry, whether it's in lead generation, operations, or whatever. But everything affects lead generation because your brand affects it and everything else. What could you bring into this industry that would really scratch an itch for your potential clients, you know? So we have a weekly workshop run by our, what's her name? Our head of customer success. And it's a live workshop. We talk to a real person in a two-way webinar every single week, you know, in a SaaS company. And then we also have weekly workshops that are two-way. You can ask questions, you know, every single week as well. So, you know, like that type of stuff is what you would want, right? So it's so simple. It's like just give your customers what you would want type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Give your customers, give your prospects like the, I was going to say, give them the human touch, but that's not what I really want to say. It's about fostering a sense of community as well too, right? I think that most people, when they're shopping a service, a product, B2B, B2C, they're looking for some sort of connection. And to your point, especially in SaaS, like there actually just happened to me today. I was talking to a chatbot and I'm like, oh my gosh, what are the steps from A to B? I just want to do this, but I almost need to just talk to someone. And I had sent an email out and that person reached back. She's like, don't ever go to the chatbot. Always ask me. And I'll be honest with you, I saved $5,000. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to go with the chat. But I think like nowadays we treat these leads and prospects as like a little bit of like a churning and burning. Like let's move them through the funnel. When you work at establishing a bit of a relationship, it definitely goes a long mile and it turns that warm lead into an actual customer. So I like that you had used that example. Now, as far as like just kind of emerging trends that you're seeing in digital marketing, what do you think is something that we should all just kind of be looking out for that could really impact what we do with our strategies for 2025?
What can we do that looks out for our strategies? Well, you know, it really depends on what industry you're in, right? But yeah. Let me tell you what's really working right now. So, you know, Donald Trump just won the election. And, you know, like him or dislike him, compared to Kamala, he put out, I think, about 40 hours of just, you know, raw, unscripted, no questions, no like, you know, tough, like preset parameters, really tough frameworks, predetermined, you know, PR written scripts of podcast content, right? Podcast, YouTube, whatever else, which is as raw and authentic as you can get. And, you know, he clocked up something like, you know, 140 million views. And then outside of that, you have Kamala that did the exact opposite, you know, did about 7 hours of podcasts. Everything was predetermined, pre-recorded, pre-written, very, very tough guardrails, stay within, and, you know, generated like 20 million views. And, you know, she only lost by like 2-3 million votes.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's really happening is that in a world of like AI and people, you know, people being able to get like everyone's so commoditized, you know, if you're a life coach and you're selling this, I could Google life coach and I could see four of you right next to each other, you know, just like how I scroll through Amazon and I'm picking, you know, buying a new notebook and there's four options and bang, I'm just going to pick the cheapest one. Like, who cares? It's a commodity, right? But in a world of that much access and comparison, and you could just economically just compare people next to each other, just like their pair of shoes, right? Or a notebook or whatever. You know, real deep, authentic connection is what can really make the difference. And not just that, you know, people are really wise to, yeah, I get that's what you have on your website. I guess what you see online. I guess that's what you did, you know, at that book promotion at that event, but if I'm going to work with you, if I'm going to give you money, then I want to know you a little bit closer. You know, I actually want to know the real version of you, and other people are offering that. So why aren't you offering that? You know, so people aren't interested in, you know, Trump's rallies or the debate or whatever. What they're interested in is seeing Trump talk shit with five different versions of a comedian, where the comedian could ask him whatever they wanted to ask him and work out, you know, is this the type of person that I want to have, you know, as our president? You know, they want to make up their own minds, right? So I think that, you know, and if you think about the power of that, you know, 120 million views for free, you know, didn't have to pay for those. The production that goes into those is more or less done from a phone, but that's like a full five-star studio production quality that we've had for the last 100 years, right? And it's free now to do all that. So, you know, TV has moved away from TV for a while. You know, TV is YouTube, YouTube is TV, channels are YouTube channels, and that's where people want to go to connect with real people, make up their minds about, you know, everything, make up their minds about like Elon Musk and who they want to buy the next car from, you know, make up their minds about the next president, make up their minds about, you know, if I need to learn marketing, which guru do I connect with spiritually? You know, which guru, you know, I'm a vegan, which guru is a vegan that I only want to support, you know, type of thing. So there's a real double-edged opportunity, you know, like, yeah, it'll take something for you to get out of your comfort zone and put yourself out online raw in that way. But also could work really well, just like how it did for Trump winning the election.
That's a really interesting example that you bring up. And I think my biggest takeaway from what you're saying is it's really the behind the scenes authenticity that people are craving more than what the polished look is. And I think a part of that, and this is my armchair theory, but a part of that is because everything is so accessible now in this digital landscape that we kind of just live in, from in social media especially, right? Everything, every social channel gives you access to everything. So the expectation, I think, now from a consumer standpoint is we should have access to it. And if you are gatekeeping that access, what are you hiding? And there is almost like this lack of trust. So it's I feel like for a brand, the challenge is really balancing authenticity and like this behind the scenes, like what do you want to show in order to be able to connect. But that's an interesting trend that you pointed out. We could probably do a whole podcast about it. I have one final question for you. And that question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
Yeah. You know, so in my first sort of 5 years of business, for the first 12, 18 months, I like didn't earn any money. Not just that, I didn't earn any money. I was in a very, very steep learning curve of how to make things work, you know, working out the sales, operations, you know, sales calls, writing copy, fixing websites, you know, learning everything, like just jumping in the deep end, in the infinite deep end. And I, looking back, because I didn't earn any money for like 18 months and I went from like six-figure job to less than zero. Looking back, you know, what I should have acknowledged and what I would acknowledge now every time is that there is going to be a learning curve. It doesn't matter how smart you are, how driven you are, how many hours in the day you allocate to this thing, there's going to be a learning curve. And there's three ways to go through a learning curve. The first way is, you know, totally self-funded, where, you know, you're not earning any money, so you got to pay for your food, rent, and everything, you know, along that period of time. So you have a time crunch. And you also have to invest, you know. So I wasn't just not earning any money, I was investing. So it's like a double negative of you know, money leaving the bank account. So it's self-funded, plus you have to invest. That's the worst place to be. That's where I was. The one is that's in the middle is you're not earning any money, but you get to, you don't need to self-invest. So you might be working with an entrepreneur for free as like an apprentice, right? Or working in a job that's not paying you that much, but at least you're learning for free, right? And you just got to be strategic with that time, how much time you put into that and how much you're learning out of that and who to learn from and what you're learning, right? Then the best option, which, you know, everyone that you see start, you know, an amazing business straight out of corporate, they hit it out of the gate, they hit $1 million, $2 million, $5 million in their first year, they've done this. So they went through the learning curve. They were paid to learn. You know, they either learned it at their job working at Facebook or working for another marketing agency or whatever, or they learned it working for an entrepreneur that you could just, you know, say, hey, look, I really love what you do. You don't need to pay me a lot of money. I want to be your personal assistant, because that way I'm going to see, learn and touch and feel, you know, every branch of the tree of the business, which is what you want. You know, otherwise you're going to do what I did. So 1, 2, and 3, there's 3 ways to go through the learning curve. You know, try to find the most economic one that you can get your hands on.
Yeah, and expect that there is a learning curve. Those are great final notes and a great way to wrap up this podcast. Thank you so much, Maxwell, for coming on here and just sharing your insights about quizzes and lead generation. It's been incredibly helpful.
Thank you for having me.
I hope that you enjoyed the conversation with Maxwell. I certainly did. I've got something a little different for us, though, for our key takeaways. I really want to focus on a couple of key takeaways based on this conversation. And the first one is lead generation with quiz marketing. Let's talk about the transformative power, or at least that is the way it was presented during our conversation, of quiz marketing and lead generation. That is not to say that I disagree. I think that it was more about the details of when it works that I probably have more of, not an issue with, but I think that's what I'm thinking through, is I may not agree with everything, but I do agree that quiz marketing is a great way to do lead generation and best way to leverage the things that you get in to really impact your business. I do think that quizzes serve as this dual purpose. They captivate potential customers while also collecting valuable insights about their preferences and their needs, multitude of ways that you can use that. Now picture this, rather than just a static form, a quiz is like a dynamic conversation, adapting and responding based on the participants' answers, like a chef who is kind of tweaking their recipe as they go tasting and adjusting to ensure that the dish perfectly suits the diner's palate. Now, the interactive approach of quizzes not only captures attention, but it really transforms like these passive observers into engaged participants. These participants are not just warm leads, but they are primed and ready for your offerings, much like guests who've sampled a bite and are eager to feast on a full course. Essentially, the more they invest in time or money, the better it is for you. I think more than anything, the tip I'd add is, in theory, this sounds amazing, but it does take work and thought on what you want to present as the value you're offering them to complete the survey. They won't ever just do it just to do it. Wouldn't that be nice? My second big key takeaway is the importance of A players. Switching gears to team dynamics, Maxwell emphasized his thought and his feeling on the critical role of A players in maintaining an effective team environment. This is not, at first glance, quite related to marketing, but actually it is. And I say this because oftentimes the marketing team is small and possibly with agency support, which is great. But when you have a small team, it means there's no wiggle room for anyone that isn't all in, that isn't an A player. Maxwell pointed out that even one B player could significantly dilute the overall team performance, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Now, a B player is kind of like this weak link in a chain that compromises the strength of the entire thing. Imagine a sports team where every player's effort is really vital, right? It's really pivotal. If one person fails to keep pace, the whole game can be thrown off. Those A players bring more than just skill. They embody integrity, a proactive attitude, and unwavering reliability. Those were on his list of how you would even define an A player, which again, I agree with wholeheartedly. This is not merely about avoiding the drag of less committed team members. It is about assembling a dream team, It is about assembling a dream team where excellence is the baseline for everybody. Cultivating a team of A players is like setting up a symphony orchestra where each musician plays perfectly in tune, creating this kind of unbeatable harmony that captivates every audience. Now, what did you take away from today's episode? I really want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page or our YouTube channel. Let's keep this conversation going. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Eich. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow. The laughter linger and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.